Welcome. This is the Lady Leadership Podcast. Sam's goal is clear, helping as many women as she can meet their full potential in business and in life. Hi, this is Sam McIntyre, and in this season of the Lady Leadership Podcast, I'm going to be talking to you about how to get the most out of your career, whether you have your own business, whether you work in corporate, or whether you're just starting out, maybe you're finishing uni. So, joining me, and I look forward to sharing all my tips and hints on how to fast track your career. Hi everyone, and welcome to the Lady Leadership Show. Super excited to introduce Rebecca Horton, who's joining me today. Now, Rebecca has just written a new book, which is called Impact, 10 Ways to Level Up Your Leadership. And Rebecca's got a reputation and passion for helping mid-level leaders, the B-suite. Her programs create a powerful impact on those that want to step up. As one of Australia's leading talent and leadership coaches and facilitators, Rebecca works with large and small organisations across the public sector, health and retail. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for being on the show. Tell me, let's get straight into it, and tell me about your new book, Impact, 10 Ways to Level Up Your Leadership.
Great. Well, you know, it really struck me that mid-level leaders have been having a pretty bad rap of it for the last couple of decades. You know, middle managers are the butt of just about every business cartoon you've ever seen. But the reality is that organizations are starting to move at such a pace, and they're so complicated, that mid-level leaders are inheriting more and more of the high-stakes decisions and risks and responsibilities than they ever have before. So, in fact, what used to be the butt of a joke is now getting pretty serious. And that's what this book is really aiming for, is to help those mid-level leaders to start to operate more like a C-suite operator. So have a lot more control over the pace of work. You know, they're normally drowning in it, so that's music to their ears. To have a lot more impact in terms of how they influence everyone around them, whether that's up, down, sideways, or even outside the organization. And to be able to think more strategically, but at high speed, which is kind of the new paradox of being
a C-suite. So true. And you refer to it in your book a little bit, The Office, and I actually couldn't watch that show when that came out. I worked in the UK at the time, and I just found it stressful. And I found I was in the office, literally. Like, it felt like my life. And I was just like, oh, my God,
yeah.
I cannot watch this show because I don't find it funny, because this is what I'm actually dealing with of a day.
Yes. Well, that's, I think, a very, very common B-suite experience right there. You know, the this kind of illusion of authority, right? So everyone looking up at you like you're the boss and you need to know everything and you're making all these very big and important decisions, but secretly you're totally winging it because you're getting no communication filtering down. You don't know what the strategic direction is. It changes every 5 minutes anyway. So you're just trying to hold things together with shoestring and look good at the same time. So that's probably why it felt a little bit too close to the bone for you, Samantha, is because that's pretty much most mid-level leaders' lives, yeah.
It's so true. And I really like in your book where you've got this paragraph and it says, sound familiar, doing more with less, priorities changing daily, organisation restructures every second Thursday, can't answer half the questions your team are asking, just as surprised as they are by major announcements, the boss keeps changing direction, no clear line of sight between corporate strategy and your day-to-day decisions, and less airtime than ever with your boss.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of lonely in the middle, right?
Lonely in the middle. Yeah, they always say it's lonely at the top, don't they? But, yeah, lonely in the middle. And I think, what you talked about is that real strategy piece. So being able to connect what you're supposed to be doing to actual strategy and being able to think at that strategic level.
Yeah, that's really, really important. A lot of mid-level leaders never got trained to do that. You know, their training was all in output, being, you know, productive and getting more for less out of their teams and running the work, but they never really got involved in developing strategy, thinking strategically, making strategic prioritization trade-offs. That was always the responsibility of their boss. But fast forward to today, and it's their responsibility, but they've never had the exposure or the training to do it. So it's really stressful for them.
Yeah, and it's really that that, you know, that kind of busy, 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 and, you know, that sort of reactive phenomenon as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. The badge of honour. How's work? It's really busy, said with a big smile. Like, that's
a good
thing,
isn't it?
Yeah. I've actually, I'm pretty much highlighting
and,
every page.
And I liked your Simon Sinek quote in this as well. Do you remember the one I'm talking about?
I do. It's the one that talks about leadership being like a tree of monkeys.
Yes, that's the one. And so looking down, you see lots of smiling faces, and looking up,
all you can see is monkeys' bottoms. <That's right.
laughs> And you use a different word in the book. You use the Simon must have said that. So you're looking up and you're seeing everyone's asses, which I thought was quite.
It is quite funny. It is, and it is interesting. And look, I mean, you know, all jokes aside, but that's unfortunately what mid-level leaders deal with all the time, right? Those that look up think they're a bit of an arse. Their job is to present a everything's perfect veneer to their boss, but of course they're looking up thinking my boss is a bit of an arse too. So it's a difficult job, that sandwich one. It always is a difficult job. You know, middle children hate it, the middle class hate it, so middle management's no different.
And so you've written out in the book 10 ways to level up your leadership. So tell me, where do you think that starts, really?
So really the 10 kind of sit underneath three pillars, if you like. So 3 is probably easier than 10. You know, really for me, this ability to control the pace of the work.
Yep.
One of the things that B-suite leaders have been taught to do over the years is simply, you know, take on more and more and more volume and responsibility. Mm. And what we're seeing is teams breaking. You know, they're not just creaking at the seams, but they're beginning to fall apart. So one of the first things that mid-level leaders need to be able to do is to push back without it being career limiting.
Yeah.
You know, they
that's
need
an, that's an important piece, the career limiting, isn't it?
Very important. Yeah. I'm certainly not out there saying don't do your job, but I am saying part of your job is now how much of the work needs to be done when and by whom, and can it wait or can it stop? And most organizations are terrible at giving you an answer on that. They kind of look at you and go, what do you mean you didn't say yes? The answer actually is you need to step up now. And in fact, being a better leader means saying no strategically.
Yeah. And I think it's that visibility piece, isn't it? So the ability to put in front of the leaders the work that, say, your team is working on and what they're doing. And it's not necessarily about saying no. It's about saying, yes, we can do that, but what would you like to stop instead, because we're at capacity now?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. And some of that is, you know, is pure courage, and some of it is actually knowing what capacity looks like and what the priorities are and what you would trade off if you took one more thing on. A lot of people haven't been trained to have a frame for that. So what I provide is simple frameworks for just organizing your thoughts so you can articulate that better with your senior leaders and hopefully come out with an answer that is have more resources, have more time, or stop that piece of work.
Yeah. And not necessarily resources or people's the answer always either, is it? In terms of, you know, 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2. Like, you're not necessarily going to be able to, you know, double the output of your team by adding a couple of people. Yeah. You've got all that, you know, training and all the rest of it. So it's about, you know, about understanding the capability, capacity of your team, about understanding what the output looks like, about kind of digging into the processes where you need to, sort of putting yourself in the work. You can tell that I've probably done this in my career. And then, you know, working out what the issues are and then working out when you have to, you know, saying to people, we can't do any more at this point in time. This is when we're going to deliver these things, and therefore we could start something else at this point.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And it makes a huge difference in a B-suite leader's life when an executive says, I've got this fabulous new initiative, lucky you. And you go, oh, yes, how lovely. I can start that in July. And to say that with authority and a big smile and absolute conviction is very, very different to taking it back to the team and then going, oh, shit, how are we going to do this?
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so it's about knowing and having done your planning and knowing where you're at. What about those situations where leaders will say everything's a priority, everything's number one? What do you mean?
So what happens to C-suite leaders a lot is they have a lot of stakeholders. And of course, every single one of those stakeholders thinks they are number one. And in their world, they are. They're right. But in your world, the B-suite leader's world, you actually need to have your own priorities, because without your own priorities, you're at the mercy of everybody else's. Mm. And very often that's why we feel pulled, you know, we feel pulled from pillar to post, because we've got, you know, seven executives all with their pet projects, all expecting us to put them first. And it becomes a popularity contest or a least worst contest, as opposed to a strategic conversation about why you're putting certain things in certain orders.
It's, you know, a bit of that whoever screams the loudest will get the most attention as well.
Very often.
I think something that works well in that case is, you know, maybe if the stakeholder is another B-suite leader, you know, making clear what the plans are and then suggesting that they get a change approved by their, you know, leader. Kind of take it to your leader to bring it back down, and often you'll find they don't want to go and take it to their leader to bring it back.
It dissipates on the journey, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't become as urgent all of a sudden. I found that works quite nicely.
Yeah, it sure does.
And I think it's a really good point around, you know, controlling the pace of work, because I think a lot of people don't realise that they actually can do that as well.
I think so, yeah. And you look at the levels of overwhelm, you look at the levels of burnout that are rising. Mid-level leaders have the worst burnout by any cohort of employees. So they, you know, they are really, really struggling with it. And I think part of it is that sense of I have no control. But actually you can have control if you choose to assert control.
Yeah. What are some of the ways then that they can do that? What are some of the ways that they can control the pace of the work?
Yeah, well, some of it is prioritising. So really having a pretty ruthless prioritisation matrix. And, you know, I'm a big fan of using simple proven tools but mastering them, so using them a lot more often than you normally would. And prioritisation conversations are fantastic because hardly anyone has them. Yeah. So engaging with those peers to say, these are my priorities, what are your priorities, how do they sit together, are there opportunities for, you know, duplication, are there opportunities for leverage? And trying to bring your stakeholders together when you have all those people fighting for your finite resources to put their project first, to actually sit them down and get them as your board of directors for the moment to help you make the decision about who goes first, because they can't all go first. And actually, when you pick them off one by one, they all say, no, 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 I'll be first. But when you put them in a room together, it's remarkable how much more grown up they suddenly become about helping you to prioritise and determine what goes first. Or pitch in some resources to make that prioritising easier.
Yeah, I think that's a really good recommendation. I've run some IT departments, and I've said, you know, me as the IT person, I can't decide what the most important work for this organisation is. Only, say, the board can,
yep,
or the board of management or whatever. So I've brought those people together and then facilitated them presenting to each other on their special project, and then got them to prioritise it using sort of customer risk and opportunity, and, you know, done a you know, sort of card system. What's it called?
Yeah, like a card sort to work out what your criteria or your axes need to be.
Yeah. And then, you know, added them up and said, well, that, you know, one project will be high on customer, another one will be high on risk, another one will be high on opportunity. Add them up, and then it's like, okay, you know, with the MD going, having the sort of 13 Fibonacci, that's what I've used. Having, you know, the MD, you know, he's got the number 13, so he can kind of, you know,
veto or sway.
He can change it all if he wants to. Yeah. And then just saying to them, okay, we're going to start to deliver piece of work by piece of work. You know, this is for large kind of chunky pieces of work, but then it's that visibility to that group of, okay, well, mine's down the list and you haven't started work on that yet.
That's exactly right. And I think an appreciation for the pressure you're under is developed through that exercise, an appreciation and some patience about the fact that you will get to their work and there is a methodology behind your delay. Mm-hmm. And like I say, if they feel really, really passionate and they want to pump up your team's capacity to deliver their work faster, well, that's a ball that's in their court now.
Yeah.
But they understand that with the balls that are in your court, this is how you're going to have to do it. And they've all signed up. It's not just you that's fighting them off individually. You've now got
You get rid of a lot of that, you know, a lot of that then mid-level kind of pet project type, can you just do X, can you just do Y, we've got this special. It's also not starting work before it's been approved as well. So how often do people start some sort of project and then, you know, it goes to the board and they say, no, we're not interested in doing that.
That's right, these half-baked ideas that suck you down. And look, we're all a little bit guilty of doing that, right? We all have our pet things and our passions, and we all know that we run off chasing things that we probably shouldn't once in a while. So again, using prioritization as a bit of a discipline controls our urges as well and stops us from chasing.
Working on our favorite things as well.
Low value but high interest, you know, as opposed to high value, high impact.
Yeah, exactly. And so what else can our middle managers do?
So the next thing I think that middle managers really need to do is to focus on their influencing. A lot of people who are quite experienced leaders will have gone through some influencing training or something in their careers. And what I mean is not the influencing skills themselves, but actually thinking about making the time and having a strategy for exerting influence.
Yep.
Too often I talk to senior and middle managers about using their influence, and they kind of wrinkle their nose up like they just smelled something ghastly. A lot of people really find the idea of using their influence a bit distasteful. There's something a bit greasy or political about it, which unfortunately, frankly, is naive.
It's how the world works, isn't it?
It is, Samantha. And look, if you want to have influence, you have to be prepared to exert influence. And a lot of people really feel that their work should speak for itself, or their boss should notice them, or et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that's not what they're paying you the big bucks for. And once you get to a certain level of middle management, you need to learn that you need to step into that space. And influence is one of the toolkit that is essential for senior leadership.
Yeah.
You have to use it.
And so what do you recommend then if you're wanting to work on your influencing?
Yeah. So I think making sure that you've got a bit of a balance in all directions. There's four directions for influence, in my opinion. A lot of mid-level leaders spend a disproportionate amount of their time managing down, you know, influencing their team and motivating and engaging. And I know that because when they come on board for coaching, the first couple of sessions, all we talk about are people on their team.
Yeah.
And I have to stop them and I go, okay, so what about your peers? What about the people with whom you're negotiating and collaborating and sometimes arguing all day long to get things to work? Because no one can really execute anything big or complicated
by themselves
as a solo. That's right, by themselves anymore. Yeah. So your extended team now is a bunch of people over whom you have no authority, and you're really going to have to exert your personal influence, your relationship skills, your negotiation, your arbitration quite heavily to get the big things done. So a lot of people kind of, they actually do struggle with that a little bit. You know, they're not really focusing and leaning into that enough. Very, very few B-suite leaders are investing in their reputation. So actually thinking about curating their brand.
And their personal brand.
Their personal brand, their leadership brand, the brand of their team.
Yes.
And ironically, there's hardly any C-suite leaders in the world who don't curate their personal brand. You know, it's a really marked difference between middle management and senior management is the alertness to personal brand reputation. So that's another area that is very much neglected in the B-suite. And the last area that is quite neglected in the B-suite is managing up.
Yeah.
Again, you know, again, it's one of those things that people kind of turn their nose up at and they go, oh, my boss is meant to manage me. Stop being so naive.
You need to tell them what you want them to hear and then go off and do stuff that you want them to do, for sure.
Absolutely. And they, you know, their success is tied up with your success. So you should see them as a tool at your disposal. You should be pointing them in the right direction. You should be telling them the words that you want said. You should be warning them about problems and how to handle those problems so that they feel highly diplomatic and well-armed. You should be asking them for what you need because it's in their interest to give you what you need to succeed. And you should be asking them what you can do for them, because they're a human too, and they're probably experiencing some pretty different pressures to you.
Mm. I think what can I do to help you? Yeah.
That's right.
And I call that sort of as well, you start taking on parts of their job that they may not want to be doing themselves, and then you're creating a bridge towards that role in terms of your skills as well.
You absolutely are. There is nothing wrong with being indispensable to your executive. And a lot of people really have that kind of that distance. We have a peculiar relationship with hierarchy. We have a peculiar relationship with falsified relationships. So, you know, hierarchy delivers a false relationship, doesn't it? That you don't look at your boss as a human who has stresses and, you know, three kids and a dog. You look at your boss as somebody who's meant to magically know everything, make amazing decisions and second guess what's in your head and stressing you out. And that's back to that, that tree full of monkeys, right? It's just really unrealistic.
I hadn't seen that quote before, and I really liked that, and I thought it was really appropriate. What else would you say?
Probably the very last thing that I really recommend that B-suite leaders spend some time on for themselves is this concept of being able to think strategically. It's not in the DNA of most B-suite leaders. Unless you have a strategy role, then it's unlikely that you've been able to invest significant time in teaching yourself strategic frameworks with which to think or strategic processes to follow to work through building a strategy. In fact, a lot of the B-suite leaders that I talk to get a little bit panicked when they get asked for the first time to develop a strategy, because many of them have never gone through that themselves.
Yeah, and I've heard people saying, "Oh, well, how will I know what's going to be going on in 6 months' time, or that type of thing?" And I more look at it as, you know, what problems do we need to solve? Does that make sense? Or where would we like to see ourselves? Like, what's that vision?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, just like any great adventurer, you kind of go, "Okay, we're going to see what's over the other side of that mountain," and we don't know. But we have a bit of a plan of how we're going to get there. We've got really good supply chain. We've got some, you know, pretty nifty navigational tools, but we're definitely going to make mistakes and discover a river that's right in the way and all these horrible things that are going to happen to us. But that's kind of the nature of business these days. It's more like trekking across country into a wilderness you've never been across before and hoping to hell that the plan works and knowing full well that it's not going to, but you'll get there anyway.
That's right. And so would you suggest then the ability to problem solve for people as well?
Hugely important. Hugely important, Samantha. And I think some really important clues in there, which is, you know, only problem solve the right problems. We all get very easily distracted by trying to solve the wrong problems.
I saw in your book the tip around, you know, what to focus on kind of right here, right now, and, you know, you've got like a little kind of quadrangle, quick wins, big deal, maybe, no, that type of thing.
Yeah, well, sometimes we're looking at problems that are a little bit like the passion projects we were talking about before, you know, things that look like a big problem, and we throw all our energy at them. And what we realize is that perhaps there's something that's not directly in our way. It's just something that was a bit messy off to the side. Or it could be something that is so huge that regardless of how much we throw at it, we're never going to shift the needle. So actually the right problem would be, how do I get around this? Not how do I blow this up?
Yeah.
So sometimes in our persistence, we can, I think we can end up, you know, hurting ourselves a little bit and bashing ourselves against the wrong problems.
And it's a bit, you know, I sometimes look at it, it's a bit like, well, what can we do? What are our options? I'm always like, what's the problem? What are the options? What's the recommendation?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And Samantha, you know, it really is as simple as that, isn't it? You need to work through. I think these days it's because of the level of ambiguity and uncertainty in business, because none of us know what the next 6 months will hold and none of us know exactly what direction we're going in.
Yeah, which we just had very proven to us, you know, with the pandemic, basically. I think someone predicted it somewhere. There's a few people claiming it. But, I mean, I don't think anyone would guess. Certainly, you know, a year ago we weren't thinking that we'd still be really in a pandemic a year later.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and 5 years ago, the taxi industry didn't predict Uber, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, the only thing that we know is that we don't know what's going to happen next year. So, yes, I can understand how, therefore, people might say, well, then it's impossible to plan. And it's impossible to plan if you adopt a kind of a directive mindset, you know, 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah.
But if you think about it more like a process of elimination rather than a process of determination, then you're playing with it more like an algebra process. You know, if the end goal is a 4 and we've got a 2 but we don't know what else we've got, then what's the missing item? Mm. And if you can work through it more like that, your kind of your known and unknowns and those sorts of processes, you'll actually find that you're starting to make your plans based on the safest route, the route of least regret. You can't know that you're going to be right. None of us can know that these days. But what you can know is that you've eliminated the least likely obstacles and you've predicted the most likely obstacles and you're ready for those and you can navigate around lesser items very easily.
Very good. So, I mean, I really enjoyed your book. And I think for anyone that is wanting to have a greater impact in leadership, I think there's some really great topics in here. And I think, you know, even if you just think about control the pace, so controlling the work, influencing who you're influencing, and then strategy. And I'd add to the bottom of strategy that planning, you know.
Yeah.
What does the 6 to next 12 months look like?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And managing up. I can't tell you the number of times I've had people sort of walk into my office with, you know, when I've been in roles without blank paper, piece of paper, you know. And, I learned 10 years ago, I walk into the office of a manager with a report saying, this is what I'm working on. This is what I've done. These are the deliverables. This is what I'm going to be doing for the next X weeks. 3 months, 6 months, this is the focus. What do you want to add? What do you want to change? Do you know what I mean? And then it's a conversation rather than a, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely right. If you walk in with a blank piece of paper, you're just taking orders and realistically you shouldn't be a mid-level leader then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Rebecca, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Go straight to the website, www.boldhr.com.au, and my contact details are down the bottom.
Lovely. And I really recommend for anyone that is wanting to level up their leadership to check out this book because lots of good practical information that they can just take away immediately.
Thank you, Samantha. That's brilliant. Good, practical and informative was what we were after.
I love it. All right. Sorry for snorting. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for spending time with me tonight. Cheers.